Please welcome Rachel Ross.
Richard Nixon and I, bet you want to hear the end of that sentence. Richard Nixon and I only have one thing in common. We were both Americans in the Soviet Union in the spring of 1972. Now, he had come there in a historic visit because the Cold War was beginning to thaw, and he had come there to negotiate the Strategic Arms Limitation Treaty called SALT. And while he was busily negotiating SALT, I was busily negotiating trying to find some sugar to put in my coffee in Moscow. Now, I get a little ahead of myself because I have to tell you how I ended up in Moscow in 1972. Americans were not allowed to come there unless they were in a group, and they were just beginning to allow groups to come. I was in community college, and I was taking Russian history to satisfy a history requirement. And my wonderful parents, who I traveled very well with, and they love to travel every year in their business, they were able to do that. They had booked a trip for two in a group. And they said, do you want to come since you're studying Russian history? I cleared it with my professor. She said, great. As long as you do a presentation when you get back, I'll give you credit. So it was a three-week trip. We were all set to go. A week before the departure, my parents called me and said, Rocky, that's my name. We had a terrible financial situation in our business. They designed and sold clothing all over the country, and they had a big order from Macy's for some shirts, which they sent out to be starched, and they came back like scarecrow, hard as rock. And they were out thousands of dollars, and they felt they couldn't leave the business, but they implored me to go anyway so they wouldn't lose it all completely. So I said, okay, and I was going to get credit. And that is how a 20-year-old ended up on a tour with 12 couples in their 60s. I was the only single person, and I was 20, and they were at 60, and we couldn't relate. And it was a difficult 3 weeks for that reason. But the experience itself is what I'm going to share with you. American planes were not allowed to land in Moscow, so you fly to Berlin, and then you get on Aeroflot. That's the Soviet airline. And they put their best jet forward for international travel. So it was a nice jet and nice flight attendants. And we get to Moscow, and we're escorted by our minders to the Moscow International Hotel, which is right on Red Square, across from the Kremlin, the onion-shaped thing. It's like being across from Barack Obama's home, you know, just the White House. It was pretty intense. This hotel was about the size of three football fields. And once you're shown to your room, you have to always go out the same door. You have to take the same path, or you can't find your room ever again. And it's designed like that on purpose. And there were cameras everywhere. It was very, very intimidating. I don't know if you know this, but the Soviets widened their streets. They created huge boulevards so that they could have military parades with tanks and giant missiles going down them. But that meant that pedestrians could not cross these huge boulevards on a green light. So they built all these tunnels underneath these streets, and they were well lit and clean. Everything was very monochrome, except because the economy was so tightly controlled, that's why there was no sugar in May of 1972 in Moscow for my coffee, but there was a glut of Revlon orange hair dye. And because the Soviet people were so hungry for some kind of difference or change, it was very monochrome, all the women in Moscow that particular season had orange hair. It was the style, bright carrot top orange, because there was this product glut on the market. So you take these tunnels under the streets, and they have a fabulous subway system, but it's down in the bowels of the earth. You go down these escalators that you don't know where it's going to stop. From the top, you cannot see the bottom. They curve, and they go for a long time. You go down into the subway, but the state wants to present, at least at the time, back the Soviet Union, 1972, wanted to present this aura of luxury in public. So in their subways, they have gorgeous chandeliers and gold leaf on the walls, and they're pristine, and they run on time, and they were very, very much into gold and chandeliers. At the Bolshoi Theater as well, I went there one night, and I was just blown away with the crystal and the red velvet and the gold applique and the chandeliers. And then I went to the bathroom, and also the bathrooms were elegant with chandeliers and everything. And then I opened the stall. There was no toilet. It was a hole in the concrete, and you were expected to squat. She knows. I didn't go. I just didn't go. So this trip was an interesting experience because we traveled by airplane, domestic airplane, and by bus. So internally, Aeroflot airplanes are like Volkswagens. When we got on the airplane to go to Georgia, to Tbilisi, the birthplace of Stalin, the airplane was so cold, you could see your breath condensed. It was pressurized, we could breathe, but you could see your breath condense. Everybody was in jackets, and the cylinder that we were in was so thin, I could hear like debris, you know, like rocks, you know, as you're going through the sky, like pitting I wasn't afraid. I just was amazed. We landed in Tbilisi, and I was able to ditch the minders a little bit and walk around. And I was amazed because on the corners would be groups of men, and they all had a Stalin-like mustache, and they were all wearing white shirts rolled up like that with these huge biceps and cigarettes tucked in the cuffs, and they all looked like Stalin to me. They just had that aura. He was still popular. This was 22 years after the end of World War II, so 1972. It wasn't, you know, that long. And then we took a bus to Azerbaijan, and we went through a huge valley, which reminded me of, now that I know, of Death Valley, because it was just barren. And in Azerbaijan, I got bit by a Soviet spider, a real spider. I never saw him, but my leg swelled up really bad, so I spent a lot of time in the hotel. And on the television, they had only state news and Dallas. You remember Dallas? Because they liked Dallas. The Soviets wanted the people to see Dallas to show how decadent capitalism was. And so it was just Dallas on a loop all the time. So I watched a lot of Dallas. I couldn't wait to really go home, although I made a few friends of the couples, but I just really felt isolated, and I couldn't wait to go home. When we got back to Moscow, we got back into that giant hotel, and on my last afternoon there, I was able to ditch the minders, and I was walking on Red Square, and I was suddenly surrounded by teenagers, and my hair was, I had a Jewish afro at the time, super curly and round, and they were practicing their English with me, and they say, Angela Davis, Angela Davis. They thought they hadn't probably seen many black people, and they just saw my afro and just wanted to know if I knew her. They asked me about Bob Dylan. And one kid offered to buy the jeans off of my body that moment. Jeans were really, really precious to them. So that was a really special moment. And that evening, I'm in the hotel. I'm packing, can't wait to go home. And a very eerie soundscape just sent a chill down my spine. I heard a siren, police siren, wailing in the back, but it's not like our sirens here. It was like the sirens you hear in Nazi Germany, that sound like you hear in the Anne Frank movies. So there was that sound of that siren, and I went to the window, and across the red square was a platoon of soldiers marching in formation, just a decorative. They weren't going anywhere, but they had their guns at the ready, and they were marching in formation, but they were doing the goose step. So I had this Twilight Zone moment of, I'm in Russia, I'm Jewish, and these guys are doing the goose step, and I went to sleep and counted the seconds till I could get on the Aeroflot nice plane to Germany, and then Sabena Airlines to Manhattan, and I woke up circling Manhattan. It never looked so good. And when we got down we're on the tarmac. Back in the day, you had to wait for the skycap to roll the stairs out to the airplane. I was very impatient. I was waiting there at the top, and he finally brings it. They open it up, and I bound down those stairs, and I kiss my hand, and I touch the tarmac, and I hug the skycap. I was very dramatic. And he happened to be an African-American older gentleman, and he had a great smile, and he said, "Girl, where you been?" And I said, "Stranger in a strange land."